This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
This is Danny and Dusty.
Merengatang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All throws and monkey sounds in there and call it good.
The old Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Danny and Dusty here on a Wednesday afternoon. Thank you for joining us, noon to three. Dusty's still in Mexico, although he might be hopping the border right about meow.
This is him coming back. He's flying, right?
No, he's walking.
Driving?
I would walk 10,000. No.
Yeah, How I Met Your Mother ruined that song for me.
It happens. But no, he'll be back tomorrow. Mañana, as in they say in the Espanol.
Yes, they do say that. Mm. That's like the one word that I know.
That Daniel.
There is, and cerveza, there is nothing funnier than me trying to communicate with Spanish-speaking students as a substitute teacher.
Mm. What do you got?
Well, there's a classroom, or there's a group of classrooms.
Is it just a lot of qué?
It's a lot of me no hablo.
Gotcha.
But it's like, I'm trying to communicate to them that they need, like, hey, this is what we're doing, right? And normally they have someone there to help them with the language barrier. But there are times where those people have to be out of the classroom. And in one of the buildings that I work in, I get no cell service. So Google Translate is not there to help me.
Escucho muy pequeño.
And it's a lot of me, like, using hand signals and like pointing and being like, hey.
Did you just say you listen very small?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. That's how I was giving him the little.
I knew Pequeño was small and that was it. Yeah. There was a lot of hand motions and pointings and just like, all right, that's good enough. Yeah. A, you get an A+ on that. That was on me. That wasn't on you.
I like to cross them up a little bit. Just do the improper verb match, because I don't use it as much as I used to.
Oh.
And it never works well. I was never fluent in Spanish, but I knew more than enough to get by.
Knew enough? See, I took it.
I can understand significantly more than I can fluently speak.
I can't speak it at all. Like, I mean, I can get enough phrases out for you to know.
You don't understand.
I can't speak it. It's a lot of pointing.
No comprende.
Yeah, it's a lot of pointing. I think there was one point where I like tried to do it where I was like, two necesitas. Mm. And then I couldn't remember what right was. And then it was like, I can't remember what read is.
Escribir.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't going to get there. Yeah.
4 years in high school, 2 more years in college, and then 13 years in restaurants.
Yeah.
So,
see, that's
I spoke some Spanish.
I was going to say, that's impressive. I took 3 years with Senora Kirby, and that's about what I remember.
Senora Montes did not like me.
Senora Kirby was. She liked me, I think.
To be fair to her, I was a lot of things that I can't say on the radio, particularly sophomore through senior year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a little saint freshman year. And then I became.
I don't buy that for a second.
Oh no! I was on a roll.
He got corrupted as a 15-year-old.
No, I mean I was just a freshman year. I was an honor roll, and then I graduated high school with a 2.0. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
dude,
look,
really good on my SATs. GPA didn't match, folks. Was not great. I had to clep a health class to graduate.
Well, sometimes there is. What does that mean?
I literally so.
CLEP.
CLEP is, you can just take a test.
Oh.
So I literally, like, without taking the health, so.
So you're supposed to take that as a freshman.
That my guidance counselor screwed up, and I ended up taking not a theater class. It was a theater design class.
Oh, stage production.
Yeah.
Let's go.
And boy, did I do nothing in that. Because I mentioned before, my graduate class was enormous, and there just wasn't enough room. And when signing up for classes, every time I tried to get a health class, like, well, no, you're supposed to have that done as a freshman kind of a deal. And so I never got it. And we got to our last semester. And I'm like, hey, guys. And my guys were kind of hit me with, oh, crap. Well, you're screwed. You're not going to graduate. You're going to have to take summer school. And I was like, the hell I am.
Like, this is on you. This is your fault.
Well,
there is nothing worse, though, than being the senior in the health class.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that would suck.
My parents are not happy about it. They pay like $150, $200, something like that. And I, without taking the class, just they go, here's the test, go. And I knew enough to where I got a B on it, and there you go. I ended up clepping, I want to say I clepped like 7 or 8 classes in the Air Force for college.
I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah. So when in the Air Force in particular, we have Community College of the Air Force. We have our own college.
Air Force CC, if you will.
CCAF.
You know what? I did know that.
Yeah.
Because they gray-shirted a lot of their football players. Mm-hmm. That's right. I did know that. Okay.
So, depending on what you go to tech school for, and that's AIT or training after basic training in the Air Force. And because my tech school is so long and so broad, working in intelligence, it's almost, 10 months. And you get credits. You get history, geography, but a lot of technology. And so the degree was communications applications technology. So I got done with tech school and I was 2 credits short of an associate's.
Oh, okay.
And I was done with math my sophomore year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
I took
Calc?
Yeah, AP Calc my sophomore year. I was done. And math, shockingly, comes easy to me.
You're good at numbers.
Yeah. So I went and clept the math classes and then I clept public speaking.
Oh, yeah.
Shockingly, I was okay at that.
That's the easiest class of all time, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone should clep that class.
20-minute extemporaneous speech. They give you a topic. You've got 15 minutes to research it. And again, this is like early internet. You're not big Google and everything, so you're putting it together. But
you had 3 speeches in college when I took that class.
Yeah, so I did 1 20-minute extemporaneous speech, done. And the great thing about it when I was in the Air Force, as long as you got a C or better on everything, it's 100% tuition assistance. So I didn't have to pay for any of these things.
Oh.
So I got my first associate's like a month after I got out of tech school. I went into the education office on base and went, I'm going to clep these. And they're like, you're going to clep math? I'm like, yeah, I'll be fine.
I would have not been fine. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know how I got out of having to take math in college, but I got out of having to take, because I didn't, like, I took some AP classes. Like, I got out of history in college because of my AP credits and different tests that I had taken.
And the only reason I needed the math was I needed a math because the associates was associates of science.
Right, right. So. Well, and that's the weird thing. So I have a bachelor of arts degree, but technically my sport management degree is a bachelor of science.
Really? So,
right.
That's it. Typically falls on the other side,
or just business in general. You would think, but for whatever reason, it is technically a science. I think it's because I had to take. Because it's a sport management degree and my specialization is in marketing, but technically I did have to take a couple of coaching classes.
Mm.
Big air quotes on coaching classes. I took football. Guess what? I did pretty well in that one. And technically parts of that was based around athlete performance and recovery. And so those counted for me. I also took a nutrition class, which somehow counted towards the science of that degree. And guess what? I did not do well in that class.
So I can get around in multiple languages. I can do Spanish, Russian, Arabic, and obviously English.
Duh.
Da svidaniya. But no, a lot of that is, you know, just being in the region. Like I can mess around with some Pashtun and Urdu that I learned in Afghanistan. Again, enough to like get the gist of things. I almost became a linguist at one point in time when I was in the Air Force at DLI at Monterey.
Were you cunning?
I was. Let me tell you, man.
I like that one.
The D-Lab test is it'll sort you out real quick. Like it's basically your ability to learn languages. Mm-hmm. And I scored really high on it. And I went to a TDY for a workshop out there. It's like two blocks from Pebble Beach.
That would be awesome.
It's in the Presidio.
I would take that. I would be like, yes, I'm going to be a linguist. And what time are we off?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Is like, it is some of the most intensive training on the planet.
Well, because it's probably the most important because like they would need you and have to use you.
This is where like
the
CIA and FBI send their linguists.
Oh. Yeah,
it's the Defense Language Institute, DLI.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. And it's intense. It is each language varies in length as far as how long you're there for, but it's anywhere from like 16 to 20 months, and you will go from not speaking it to being fluent. Like I want to say after the first month, English is not allowed.
Really? Yeah. It's full immersion. I remember when Senora Kirby tried that, and that did not fly in the 2014-year-old Hawkinson High School.
There you go.
The kids were like, no, Senora Kirby, no.
So the beef that I hold against Senora Montes, I broke my right wrist my sophomore year. And this is not, you know, we don't have cell phone. Well, that's not true. I had just gotten my first Nokia brick phone to play Snake with, of course. but we didn't have access to, like, laptops. Like, we didn't have those then. And she tried to make me write left-handed. I'm like, I, like, held up my cast, like, hello?
Get someone else for me. They usually get someone for you. Like, when my brother broke his collarbone, he had to have, like, a scribe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just went full, like, medieval.
Get
a scribe and a squire.
Well, there were, like, 2 weeks left of the school year, and he's like a third grader, which makes it even funnier.
Oh, I broke my wrist in winter break.
Like a third.
I had half a year left, buddy, and I had that cast on for like 10 weeks, 10, 12 weeks. 10 weeks because I cut it off with a hacksaw at the 10-week mark now that I'm remembering that.
I love that for you. Yeah, my brother, there was a... You can't cut off a cast that you don't have when you break your collarbone. So he had a personal scribe that would walk around with him. And I believe she had to write down everything. Like if they were like, hey, here comes an essay that you got to write. There'd be my third grade brother telling some adult, hey, please write this down for my article. I would like this done in this way.
Wow. That's a lot of control and power over a human in high school.
No, that was a third grader.
He was a third grader?
He was a third grader when he broke his collarbone.
I think that's a little bit different because that's a kid. You know what I mean?
That's a kid.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, if you're in high school, that's a...
Yeah.
That
could be a problem.
That's why they're not handing out scribes in high school. You know,
well, you don't need one now. You just have voice to text.
Oh, God. Yeah.
There's no scribes now. The scribe has fallen off. As a job in the, you know, the local economy.
Technology just snatching jobs away. No more scribes.
The scribe is gone. Yeah. I mean, when's the last time there was a good scribe? Probably never again.
Probably the 1600s.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like people who write speeches for like important politicians, yeah, would they technically be scribes?
They're quite literally speech writers.
Yeah, so they're the new scribe.
Yeah, but they're not really writing.
But they're not like taking dictation.
Yeah, like they are.
They
are the court reporter.
They're putting
the
down
closest thing that we have, I think.
Yeah. So the court reporter. Okay.
And so that machine is crazy.
Or the closed captioners.
Well, they all write their own way too. The court stenographer, mm-hmm, or whatever. Like no two person spells or writes the same.
It's super weird. I also feel we've got.
I don't understand it.
We've got closed captioning on the. On the YouTubes for K2, and I'm always like, is this an algorithm doing this, or is there somebody somewhere doing this? Because this is like it picks up even like all my like little ticks and weird things and pauses, and it's like, because sometimes it'll just be on, because for whatever reason my wife, when she logs in, she turns it on, and I'm like, stop doing this, it drives me crazy.
I don't want to watch it.
I can't do the closed captioning on anything. But I would be remiss now, with total squirrel moment. Buckle up, folks. Intrepid weatherman Dave Selesky at K2. As Joe Tyree and I were getting ready to do Rip City Wrap-Up last night, I walk in. First of all, walks in. Those that don't know, Dave's a dude. I love Dave so much.
Most Daves are dudes.
Oh, he is just a... If there is somebody in news that you want to sit down and have a beer with, it is Dave Selesky.
Really?
Oh, dude, he is a dude and a half. But I'm wearing shorts yesterday, mm-hmm, and he just walks in. Shorts on TV. Love that for you. Love that. And he wasn't being sarcastic. Like, I would love to do that. He goes, fight the power, young man. Fight the power.
Well, he's got to stand. He's got to be in front of the weather map. Well, he's got to be moving around.
Dave's like 6'8".
Is he really that tall?
Dave's a big dude.
Good for Dave.
Yeah. We go, hey, what's up with the weather? And he goes, dogs laying with cats. Golf size hail, funnel clouds, things I can't say on the radio.
Be safe.
He goes, prepare yourself accordingly. And we go, what time is that going to hit? He goes, about 3:00. And I just looked at like, oh, God.
It's so nice out right now.
And that's the thing is like.
It's beautiful.
Apparently, it's supposed to be a complete S show here in about 3 hours. So, and Dave is not one of those guys that is like, snowpocalypse is coming. He's usually pretty. If anyone slow plays it of the weather, folks, it's him.
Dave's no Chicken Little.
Yeah. And he's like, it's going to be cool, but it's also going to be terrifying. Because it's supposed to be like full on like West Texas thunderstorm weather. It's supposed to be like damn near 80 degrees with just apocalyptic stuff happening for like what we're used to. So if you're out and about and it seems like things are about to get sideways, to get home, stay off the roads.
If only I had a white t-shirt and a cowboy hat, I could be Glenn Powell.
There you go.
In a truck.
I love that you go with Twisters 2.
Well, I never saw Twisters 1. Or Twisters.
Twister.
You're right.
Twister.
There's Twister, but then there's also Twisters, because there's two of them.
Yes. I've cows. Seen this. We've got cows.
I meant to watch Twister.
Yeah.
I just never did.
Rest in peace, Bill Paxton.
Yeah, he's pretty good in that, I heard.
Oh, that's right. He is gone, huh?
Yeah.
God, crazy.
Chet.
Yeah, it happens. Gunned down his prime. RIP.
I don't think that's how he died.
Let's get this show started. The Portland Trail Blazers last night take on the Cleveland Cavaliers in a game they probably had to win to push into any possibility of the play-in. What happened and where do they go next? Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Last night, the Portland Trail Blazers fall to the Cleveland Cavaliers in what was probably a must-win game if they want to keep things going for the play-in of the last couple days. I've talked about the math necessary because of the loss column. Heading into the night, the Blazers were 3 games behind the Mavs and Suns in the loss column and where they have to go to kind of get things done. What that means is however many wins those two teams, the Suns and Mavs, get, the Blazers have to win four more. Well, with a 122-111 loss to the Cavs last night, they basically have to go 8-1 in their final nine games if they want to have a chance. Which,
so you're saying there's a chance?
Pretty unlikely now,
right? But I did feel like they played pretty well in the game.
I thought they played.
You got a lot out of the young guys. You didn't realize that Donovan Klingon is now going to be a 3-point specialist.
Look, the Blazers, they told me during his workouts and the process, they think at some point in time that he will be able to shoot it well enough.
He works at it. I mean, like when he first started out at UConn, he couldn't shoot outside of the paint.
Well, I mean,
and I mean, look, he's not. He's not going to go 2 for 3 in most games. But no. If you can at least have something where they got to honor it.
They're not going to. No, nobody is. It's about volume,
right? Well,
if he gets to where
I'm
he's taking
cheek.
Well, no. I'm saying like if he gets to like a Marc Gasol-ish level, then they have to kind of honor it, and it kind of bends it. Look, I don't expect him to be Kristaps Porzingis. I don't expect him to be a guy who's going to sit out there because his superpower is offensive rebounding. And last night he had 8 bleeping offensive rebounds.
He was awesome on the glass.
I thought
he's great defensively.
Despite it not being his best box score game, it was a good box score game. 18 points, 12 boards, 2 assists, 3 blocks. That's a good night at the office.
Very good.
6 of 10 from the field, 2 of 3 from 3. It got to the line, 4 of 7 from free throw line. That's something probably more than the 3-point shooting, you want to see his free throw shooting improve. And that's usually one of the indicators of 3-point shooting if you're a good free throw shooter. And he's just, I think he's hovering around like 56% on the season.
From the free throw line?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. Like, what you want out of Donovan Klingon is, hey, can you go and get offensive rebounds? He had 8 of them.
He's up to 60% from the free throw.
Are you going to be able to get that rim protection that the Blazers have desperately needed? Yep. He had 3 blocks in this game.
No, and the big thing, the big difference
is, he looked good.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Remember, the last time they played the Cleveland Cavaliers, Donovan Klingon fouled out in 11 minutes. And going into that matchup on the road, it was the matchup I was terrified for him because Mobley and Allen are just so different. Evan Mobley is he's listed as a 7-footer. He's 6'11". It was funny. I was talking to a couple guys in the media row behind me. I go, isn't it interesting that Evan Mobley and Denny Avdija are like, Denny's clearly not that much shorter than Evan Mobley. Like it was, you had to kind of squint to really notice it. And they're both standing there for free throws, and they're both kind of standing up straight. And I was like, cause Denny is every bit of 6'9".
Right.
I mean, he's not a fake 6'9". Like he's very clearly a 6'9" dude.
Mm-hmm.
Evan Mobley is not very clearly a 7-footer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're 6'11", but he's got like a 7'4", 7'5" wingspan.
Right. Gotcha.
So it's freaky long arms. You're just like, oh, cause it was standing next to each other. You're like, well, I mean, Mobley's shoulders are maybe a little bit higher than Denny's, but his arms went like 3-4 inches further down. You're like, good God, man. Like, your arms are freaky long. But with Donovan, it wasn't his best box score night, but to go from literally being played off the floor and fouling out in less than 12 minutes of action to being very good last night.
Right.
That, to me, was like the surest sign of, there you go. You're figuring it out.
Right.
He looked comfortable. And like, look, he got turned inside out by Darius Garland a couple times. Do you know how many people Darius Garland turns inside out on a basketball court on a nightly basis?
Darius Garland is also one of those guys just because of how good Donovan Mitchell is and how good Mobley has been with his emergence from his 3-point shooting. Exactly. Like, in this game, he took over at the end. He scored or assisted on the last 5-6 buckets? He was awesome.
He scored 9 points in under 2 minutes to slam the game shut.
It went
from a 3-point game to a 12-point game like that. And it was like, oh.
Yeah. People don't give him enough credit.
DJ's one of my favorite players in the league. I love him. I've loved him since he came in. And he was 4 of 16 in the first matchup. He had a really rough game against the Blazers. And that was part of the reason why that game was so close. Kenny Atkinson, the Cavs coach, though, pregame, said, watching the tape back, he goes, we were lucky. They should have beat us the first time. We just, had some stuff go our way. And that's, you make your own luck a lot of times in the NBA. And being a veteran team, when you're playing younger teams, you're going to come up on the right side of that more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
But Darius Garland last night had 27 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds. He was 11 of 19. And I don't think that underscores just how good he was, because Tumani Kamara was wearing him like a cheap suit.
He was all over him.
I mean, they were talking crap back and forth in a fun, competitive way, yeah. Not in a dirty way. DG was definitely up for the challenge, and Tumani was very much up for the challenge that DG presents. And how hard Darius had to work to get his shots. If you're a basketball fan, I know Blazers fans are like, oh, I don't want Darius. Just be a basketball fan and see how good Tumani covered DG last night. And the shots that he hit were incredible. Floater after floater after, and the one that sealed it, like that in that 9-0
over
run,
Klingon.
That floater that just went straight up, straight down, over Klingon, up in the air. It was just like, oh my God.
It dang near touched the roof. Like, that's how high up he shot it.
I mean, his touch is exquisite.
Yeah.
And that's the shot that I want Scoot Henderson to learn. Like, I want him to go to the Darius Garland, Mike Conley School of Floaters.
Mm-hmm. Well, but this also shows you, I mean, look, it's dumb, but hey, guess what? The Cavs are good. There's a step up.
You're really good.
Your last two games have shown you, like,
the difference.
Yes. You had a nice run. You played a weaker part of your schedule. You were able to win more games. And this team has clearly taken a step forward from what they were last year. Now, I know that upsets some people because now you're not going to get as good of lottery odds. But I do think that there is some solace in the growth of your young players. Tumani Kamara has been excellent defensively all year. One of the best in the league. Donovan Klingon, it's taken him a while. But remember in October, you're talking about Klingon. Well, we're going to be happy if he gets 10 to 15 minutes. He played 32 minutes last night. 32! Yeah. And he was out there the entire time, yeah. And he looked
and
great
wasn't in
the
foul
entire
trouble.
Time.
And the only, like, quote-unquote bad foul that he took was after a Blazer on the other end didn't get a call. I think it was Sam Merrill ran into a guy, and it was like, all right, come on. Donald Klingon just threw him to the ground.
Right.
And he didn't argue. It was intentional. It was a message-sending foul of like,
right.
Oh, you think you're going to hit my guy and get away with it? Like, he threw him to the ground, didn't even look at him, stepped over him, ref, you know, blows the whistle for the foul, and Donovan just put his head down, walked the other way, and it wasn't a disappointing foul, it was a, try that again.
Right, and that's the role he has to take on as the rim protector.
He needs to be the goon, and there's been times this year where he's been in foul trouble where he probably needed to goon it up a little bit.
And he couldn't.
Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things I was like, yes, good, learn the dark arts.
Yes.
Because, look, Draymond Green is
embrace your inner Hurley.
Draymond Green is defensive player of a generation. There's no doubt about that. And the fact that he's defensive player of the year favorite right now ahead of Mobley, there's some stuff there I don't like. But there's something that happens or doesn't happen when he is on the court. No one has ever hard fouled Steph Curry with Draymond Green on the court. Not once.
You wouldn't dare.
You wouldn't dare because Draymond is about that life.
He's Marty McSorley to Wayne Gretzky.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one ever checked Gretzky when McSorley was out there.
Nope.
Because he was going to put you down.
You were going to physically pay for it. And I was like, good. Because as a big, unless you're Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, like, you do not, like, for the Houston Rockets right now, Steven Adams is out there. Steven Adams, if you just do not. You do not do anything sideways if Steven Adams is on the floor because that big Kiwi is going to come over and cave your skull in.
Right.
Like, I had Klingon on the podcast, was it 2-3 weeks ago? And I asked him, you know, who has surprised you this year? He thought about it for a second. He goes, Steven Adams. And I was like, what would you think? And he goes, you can't move him.
He's solid.
He goes, I was blown away by how strong he is. And I just kind of laughed. I'm like, DC, just so you know, he's kind of universally thought I was the strongest guy in the league. He goes, yeah, figured that out.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, I get it. And it's like, you have to be physically imposing if you're going to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Donovan's been in foul trouble, or he's been a little uncertain of, like, when to close out, when to jump, when to stay down, how many steps he can take and recover. Like, that's the stuff you have to learn.
Right.
And I thought last night he did a great job of being in the right place, because fouls, particularly for young guys, they come out of two things: inexperience and not kind of understanding spatial stuff, and like reaching or like just rookie stuff. You know what I mean?
Trying young to do stuff. Too much, young mistakes that you learn by doing.
And that was the thing last night. I didn't think he got caught.
Right.
He didn't get his hand caught in the cookie jar. He didn't bite on pump fakes all the time. Like, I thought he was really, like, again, one of his better box score nights, not his best, but I thought his box score and how he played the game was the best thing that he had going for him.
Yeah, no, I loved it. It's, you need to see growth. You're not a playoff team. You're not a play-in team yet. But if you want to be one next year, he's going to have to take steps forward, just like Kamara took this year, just like I feel like Scoot Henderson did this year. Shaedon Sharpe at times has done it as well. So you need more games like that, but I think it's a good sign.
It is. And we'll went a little bit longer. We'll on the other side of the break, we'll talk about where the Blazers sit in the play-in. Coming up next is the Big Kahuna with a Sports Center update.
You ever had a Big Kahuna burger?
With their loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers last night, the Portland Trailblazers fall to 32-41 on the season. Now 3.5 games back of the Sacramento Kings and Phoenix Suns, 3 games back of the Dallas Mavericks. The thing that I will keep belaboring and people will get mad at me for saying is that what you have to look at are the losses. Kings and Suns both at 37. I said Mavs and Suns are both at 37. It's Kings and Suns that are both at 37. The Mavs lost last night in a back-to-back without Anthony Davis. After he made his return against the Brooklyn Nets, he was not going to play in a back-to-back. He shouldn't be playing at all, but we'll talk about that later. The Mavericks did lose to the Knicks last night, so they have 38 losses. So now the Portland Trail Blazers are a +5 to pass the Kings and Suns. So it's X +5 because they are 4 games back, and they have to pass them. Unless they beat the Kings tomorrow. Right. Then it opens up some other machinations.
Well, they would still have to be ahead of the Mavs or the Suns.
To get the 10.
And then even with Sacramento.
Yes.
So they're not going to make it. And, I mean, frankly, you shouldn't want them to make it. What's best for the organization is hopefully, you know, some lottery balls go your way and you get a higher pick than where you're slotted to right now. But, again, I think if you're a Blazer fan, it's weird. You have to look at it glass half full, and you need losses to look like the loss you just had to Cleveland.
Oh, and here's where it gets really interesting. As it stands right now, the Tankathon standings, the Miami Heat are at 31-41, which means they have the same number of losses as the Portland Trailblazers.
Yep.
They've won 2 in a row. Okay? The Blazers have lost 2 in a row. If they're 31-41, that means the Blazers are a half game out of the 8th best lottery odds.
And what were the Blazers last year? 5th?
At the end of the season, 5th or 6th. And they moved up to...
So you're not doing too well.
So
not that much better.
No. And the gap between... Here's where it gets sideways, right? If you're talking about the team that's 6th worst in the NBA, the Brooklyn Nets, they're 23-49. It's nine games.
Yeah, you're not getting any further down.
No, I'm saying like that the gap there is just
right.
It's not about getting down. It's like there's very clear cutoffs of levels of crappiness. Mm-hmm. Washington is 115, Utah is 16, Charlotte 18. That is the ugh. Oh my god. After that, New Orleans at 20, Philadelphia 23, Brooklyn 23, and then Toronto at 25. That's your next group of. That's the next group of woe.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just a cluster. 31 for Miami, 31 for San Antonio, 32 for Portland, 32 for Chicago. And then there's the 3.5 game gap with Dallas, Sacramento, and Phoenix all at 35.
So when you look at this, like the 76ers aren't going to win another game. They will do everything in their power not to because they lose their pick at if they're higher than 5?
6.
Higher than 6.
And it's not where they end the season. It's after the lottery odds.
Right.
Somebody has jumped up every year. So they need at least to be 5th to give them that, you know, technical 2-spot wiggle room, both 5 and 6.
So you're essentially locked into 8. As the Blazers.
Your best possibility, yes. So mathematically... And even if you factor out like players that aren't playing and stuff like that, the most likely position for the Blazers to finish the season right now is the 8th best lottery odds. I've been saying that for about 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of looking at the schedule, looking at the math, and looking how things were going to shake out. Even after they got a couple wins and the Suns and Mavs, I was like, the probability right now for the Blazers to make the play-in is 2%.
Chip in a chair. But
so, and just for perspective, the Blazers have a 3% chance right now at the 10 spot at the number one overall pick. They quite literally have a better chance at number one overall pick right now than they do of making the play-in.
Well, you know what? I kind of like that. I like that a little bit better. I mean, look, you're probably not going to get the number one pick.
No,
but
I mean,
if someone moves
even
up
if you get down to eight,
why couldn't it be you?
I mean, even if you get down to eight, you have a 6% chance of getting the number one overall pick. It's not great,
right.
But what matters there, and we've said this ad nauseum, is the fact that you're going to double your odds at the top four.
Right.
You go from 13 point, well, not double, but damn near double. You go from 13.9% chance at the top four to 26.3. That is a sizable difference.
Well, and
you basically have a 1 in 4 chance of moving into the top four.
And you got to love that as a Blazer fan. But correct me if I'm wrong, this draft class is one of the deeper ones in a while.
It's one of the better draft classes. There's no doubt about
it. And maybe it's just because like I've been watching more college basketball this year, but it feels like the product is so much better, which in my brain then means, hey, the players are better. Like, I'm still a little bit confused. Like, I understand why, like, the upside to Bailey and the upside to Harper, the two Rutgers guys. I understand that. But when you start getting closer in and I look at, you know, like the No Ceilings mock draft where they had Austin Newell in Portland, or there was another one that I saw where they had Con Knupple in Portland, the Duke kid, the other Duke kid.
Yeah, one of three.
Right. It's like, oh, I watch those guys a lot this year. Mm-hmm. I like them. I like what they could add to the team.
Yeah.
Like, they could be important pieces. And again, maybe it's because I watch more college basketball this year, but it does feel like you're going to be okay if you can get, you know, top five or higher. You're going to get a pretty good
return.
Look,
you end up in the top four, you're in a good spot.
Real good.
And even if it's not a player, it's an asset. And
trade, yeah.
It opens a lot of different doors. All right, coming next, one quarterback is off the board, headed to the New York Giants and Russell Wilson, which we'll get to in hour number two. But the Pittsburgh Steelers and some of their players changing their tune after Russell Wilson has officially signed with the Giants. With that, next here on Danny and Dusty, Tenney the Fan. If you remember, about a week ago, Cam Hayward of the Pittsburgh Steelers got out there after Aaron Rodgers is doing what Aaron Rodgers does and taking his time to make a decision, was like, either be a Steeler or don't.
Right.
And look, and I get it. Like, we need to figure some stuff out. So if you're going to be here, be here. If not, whatever. And DK Metcalf kind of echoed the same sentiments. Well, Cam Hayward has corrected that. And he even says, well, this is on Good Morning Football this morning. He said that statement was misconstrued. I was asked a question, would you go to the lengths of going to a darkness retreat to recruit Aaron Rodgers? I said, I'm not doing that. The pitch is, if you want to be a Steeler, be a Steeler. That's all it was. It wasn't that I don't like Aaron Rodgers or I'm against it. It's very convenient that this statement comes out and he makes this appearance on Good Morning Football 12 hours after Russell Wilson signs with the New York Giants, and all of a sudden the Steelers are like, ah, crap, we literally have no options. Now he says, when I look at our team right now, it'd be really cool to have a guy like Aaron Rodgers. But I can't be the guy who gets it over the finish line. He's got to make those decisions for himself. I'm excited to see what happens.
I wish Cam would have just doubled down. I wish he would have just doubled down and been like, because Cam seems like a no-nonsense kind of a guy.
Oh, no way.
And at
the
this
son
point,
of Ironhead Hayward is a no-nonsense guy.
He's the ultimate Steeler through and through. And at this point, if everything that Aaron Rodgers does is the ultimate don't look at me, look at me thing, right? And I'm over it, and I know Cam Hayward's over it, and I know most sane people are over it.
But the front office or somebody in player personnel just said, hey, Cam, gonna need you to be nice.
Yep. Well, that's essentially what is happening here because everybody else has signed.
Yep. And they don't want Mason Rudolph.
No. No, and you shouldn't because you've already done it with Mason Rudolph.
We have Mason Rudolph at home.
But this idea.
What about Skylar Thompson?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, hey, you could always draft Jackson Dart. Is that bad of an option?
No, but I think it.
I don't think they would.
No, I think the fear there is that he's Mason Rudolph.
Yeah.
Look, Mason Rudolph fits a particular profile.
I'd almost rather have
strong armed.
Yeah, at least you don't have to deal with the sideshow that is Aaron Rodgers.
Sure.
You know, and maybe that's more of a, I just don't like Aaron Rodgers' personality.
No, it's fine.
Just like his family. But maybe that's the better road to go down. But I was listening on the drive-in to some different podcasts and some different football stuff, and it came up the conversation of, if you're Aaron Rodgers and you go to the Steelers and you fail, Does it take everything away?
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at the Jets and the S show that they were.
And what he helped create. Because they went from
the organizational structure with the Steelers is as sound as it gets. And so if you go there and you fail, and you've got DK, and you've got Pickens, and you've got a good offensive line, good enough offensive line.
They're getting better, and they're young, so they're only going to keep improving.
And you certainly have a good defense.
Yep.
And you've got a coach. It's not a...
He never loses. Literally never loses.
Yeah, does not have a losing season in his career. Was it 15 or 16?
No, I think it's closer to 17 or 18.
Okay, so again, a decade and a half plus of not having a losing season.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go there, and barring an injury, but let's say you play, let's be nice, let's say 16 of 17 games, 15 of 17 games,
right.
And you're just not good, then it's on you.
Well, it's been on him. That's the thing.
Well, but no, but like there's no excuse. Like, there's some weapons there. There's some stuff to work with. You've got a good tight end.
Right.
Aaron loves himself a good tight end.
But again, remember, he went to New York because they were a quarterback away.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell me now that all of a sudden, because it didn't work, they were, I guess they were actually more than a quarterback away.
Well, I mean, the offensive line was the question, and obviously we saw it four snaps into his first year.
See, but again, Mekhi Becton was drafted to play offensive line and be the left tackle there, and he couldn't work, and they couldn't make it work for him. But as soon as he gets to Philly, he becomes a top-notch guy. Now, I understand that they bumped him inside.
And the rest of that line.
I understand that. But they still made it work with him.
Sure.
Right? So,
but that's also, Philly not only has the best offensive line between them and the Lions, they probably have the best offensive line coach and developer, too.
Which is fair. So maybe the team was further than a quarterback away, but at the same time, he was supposed to be the savior.
Sure.
He's supposed to come in. But you do have the excuse of
it's the Jets.
Yeah.
They have not been functional under Woody Johnson.
Well, that's because he's got brick running the team.
But you understand what I'm saying, though?
Like, I do, 100%.
Whereas the Steelers, ownership, general manager, coach, all the way on down.
Yep.
It is an organization that you out and out trust. Now, have they been the best team in football? No. But have they had issues as far as consistency? Hell no.
They're the most consistent
franchise in football.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And
if you don't go in and at least meet that bar, it is on him.
That's why I'm so surprised that they're even considering this as an option. I mean, one, it shows you what they thought of Fields. It shows you what they thought of Russ. Because there was a time a month ago where we're like, well, they're going to get one of those two back.
Well, I mean,
now they got neither.
Yeah, and Cam Hayward was a big part of the push to bring Russell Wilson in. So this whole like, well, Cam Hayward doesn't usually do this. Like, no, he quite literally did this for Russell Wilson.
Well, he's smart about doing things more behind the scenes than he was. Like, this one got out. It got aggregated. Everyone saw it on Twitter. He's more of a quieter behind-the-scenes guy.
Well, he was very vocal in the Russell Wilson stuff, though.
No, it didn't get aggregated
It did, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, he did pop up in that. He campaigned for him publicly. And that's why I think you're getting this statement now. This is, again, from Cam Hayward. What I would say to him, Rogers, if you come to the Steelers, the goal is to win. We haven't had the success we want, but the goal is still in mind to raise Lombardi and bring the seventh one to Pittsburgh. We don't really care about the glitz and glam of New York, but the focus on the good, hard football, competing every day, challenging each other, and we've got to go from there. So that seems like Cam saying, I'm sorry, I'm not sorry.
Yeah. And he shouldn't be.
Which, I mean, it's not a bad thing. I just find it funny that Cam is very, very clearly being pushed out to be like, hey, we need you to massage the messaging here a little bit because we need some help landing Aaron.
And he's a little salty about it. I mean, Aaron Rodgers literally took Saturday to go there, talk to the organization, talk to the coaches, talk to the front office for 6 hours. And then he left. And now he's still doing the whole song and dance of like, oh, I don't know if I will. I don't know if I won't.
Yeah.
Aaron knows.
Yeah.
You know at this point.
Yeah.
You know whether you want to play or not play.
Yeah, he's dragging out. It is what
but
it is.
You want to be the center of attention. So he's going to wait until it's the most opportune time for him to be the center of attention. And then he'll make his decision. And I'm over it. Aaron Rodgers.
Trust me, I get it. Coming up next, hour number two, some unfortunate news for Damian Lillard as he is diagnosed with a deep vein thrombosis. And that will be the end of his season and probably the end of what we've seen of the Milwaukee Bucks, at least this year. We'll get to that here in hour number two on Danny and Dusty, Tinny the Fan.